You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
This week we actually have a Tim's pick for you. So, what do we got, Brad?
This week we are smoking the Las Claveras?
Calaveras.
My Spanish is horrible. I don't know why you always try to get me to pronounce the Spanish things.
Because
you
know I can't funny. Do it. That's why I do it.
Fucking asshole.
Yeah, this is by Crowned Head Cigar, and
I almost treat this as a hybrid, because it's kind of like it is by Crown Head, but I think they also partnered with my father.
Yeah, it's a collaboration with my father's cigars, and it's something they started last year. It's kind of a tribute cigar to the Mexican Dia de los Muertos, kind of a...
The Day of the Dead, you non-Spanish-speaking folks out there.
But it's their tribute cigars to all the people that we've lost in the year. And it's a pretty damn good smoke. It's very citrusy at the start.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, from my palate, there's a little bit of a subtle spice that lingers on the tongue, but it's definitely not as spicy as some of the other cigars. And
it's more of a sweet spice than a peppery spice.
Maybe like a smoked paprika or something, because there is a little bit of a sweetness, but also a leathery taste that I pick up on it. So it's what I would consider a fairly complex range of... you're just going to let me sit there and like watch the wheels turn. Like,
I saw the smoke coming out of your ears. There was a thought coming.
It was there, and then it was gone. And
yeah, the thing about these Las Calaveras, too, they are... severely limited release. They only release 1,250 boxes of 24 cigars each. So if you can find them, like I said, they're limited release, so get them while you can. We pick these up at the cigar shop, our home base for the cigar nerds. And like I said, they currently have them in stock. So if you want to pick one up, I know they're there. I don't know where else they're at, but I know, I know they've got them there.
Yeah, we can give you the password.
Yeah, tell them the Cigar Nerd sent you. And then he'll make fun of us, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious, as the show progresses, we'll talk more about the cigar as we get further down, probably into the first third of it. And I mean, so far, I've been happy with this cigar. I mean, awesome recommendation. Thank you, Tim. Woo!
Yeah, it's got a complex flavor to it. It doesn't really start off that strong, but it is medium to full-bodied cigar, and from what I hear, as you smoke it, the strength kind of powers up toward the last of it. We'll let you know when we come back for our final thoughts.
Yeah, and this is a little bit smaller of a cigar compared to some of the stuff we typically smoke, too, because the biggest ring gauge on this is a 6x52. There's the 5x50, and then the 5 5/8 by 46. So
yeah, it's definitely not a fat cigar like we tend to smoke a lot of, but I mean, it's a good decent size. And this week will be our Jurassic Park episode, since we just went to see the new Jurassic World. So you'll hear all about our dinosaur adventures.
It's going to be the prehistoric podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh hell, we should have done the island gym, since freaking all the Jurassic Parks take place on an island, but. Maybe next week.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We have a guest here in the Nerd Cave today. and you'll hear him later on when we get to the Blow and Smoke interview segment. But welcome Eric Carpenter to the Nerd Cave.
Yo.
He's never really welcome.
No, I shouldn't be.
He just kicked in the door and was like...
Yeah, he showed up, and we felt bad, and we couldn't turn him away, so we're like, fuck it.
They both, you like, at the same time, did the Captain Jean-Luc Picard face palm and went, fuck this guy.
Yeah, I mean, we go do an interview, and he's like, hey, that's pretty fun. Can I come do like, some more stuff? Sure, okay. Come on.
It's a slippery slope. I mean, just you're addicted.
Yeah, just keep your pants on.
Podcasting is like heroin. I mean,
it is kind of fun.
So, sweet.
So what are we talking about this week, Brad?
I think we're talking about genetics, and apparently there was this really successful movie that just came out called Jurassic World or something like that. Have either of you guys seen this movie yet?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
Yeah, nothing is cooler than dinosaurs. Except heavy metal dinosaurs and SWAT raptors, but we'll get into that later.
I mean, yeah, raptors shooting lasers from their eyeballs. That could have been the only thing I would have added.
Raptors. The problem was that this new Jurassic Park was not done in the Viking Age.
Yes.
Because that would explain the fucking laser raptors.
If you don't get the jokes, go watch Kung Fury. All right. As we know, like the first Jurassic, we'll start in the way back 22 years ago, 1993, when I was...
I just want to stop you right there.
What's that?
Because when I was going back and doing my research, like I remember vividly how awesome Jurassic Park was watching it the first time. I could not believe that shit happened 22 years ago.
It makes you feel old, don't
it? I mean, fuck. It's like, you know, the new Mortal Kombat with, you know, you're playing as the character's kids these days. And I'm like, damn, am I that old now? Fuck.
Yeah, like, until I actually looked up, I'm like, holy shit, this was that long ago. That's probably why it was so, like, huge, because, I mean, what, we're middle school when the first one came out?
I think I was high school. Fuck you guys.
I graduated, so I was probably a freshman when this came out, so yeah, I might have been in high school.
But, I was still in Pampers.
You said 93, right?
Yeah.
Sophomore year, baby.
Steven Spielberg directed, based on... the Jurassic Park novel by Michael Crichton.
And I gotta say, if folks have not read those two books, you know, that and The Lost World, dude, those books were absolutely phenomenal. Like, at that age, I was into comic books, and anything that I could see, you know, gore and everything in a short amount of time, but those books sucked me in, like, I don't know. I felt like a smart kid walking around with a, you know, 3-inch thick book at the time.
I mean, because everyone who was a kid, especially kids who were science nerds, have always loved dinosaur stuff. I mean, any like old, like, you know, National Geographic and that, where they showed them actually, you know, digging up dinosaur bones and going to the museum and looking at the big T-Rex skeletons. I mean, this was the movie that you're like, oh my God, this is the first time I've seen. I mean, the special effects were so good that you're like, oh my God, this is what dinosaurs look like.
Yeah, I mean, even going back and, you know, watching the movie earlier, you know, this week, I was like, still some of the special effects and stuff held, you know, to the time. And then there were others that I just had to call absolute BS on.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, this Steven Spielberg bought the rights to this book before it was even released. I mean, he had... I guess, you know, knew Michael Crichton, got like an early copy, and was like, dude, I've got to make this movie. Like, sell me the rights, like, now before you even release the book.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, he acquired the rights for, you know, $1.5 million and then acquired Michael Crichton himself for an additional $500,000. Like, dude, that can't be a bad gig. Like, hey, not only am I going to buy the rights to this, but you know what? Can I just go ahead and hire you two? Like, here's $500,000. You don't even have to do anything.
Yeah, he wrote the original screenplay, and then it was kind of, you know, redone, bumped up by other writers. But yeah, he did the original screenplay. And yeah, you're talking about the special effects. The practical effects still hold up. I mean, I rewatched it last week, and the practical effects looked like, damn, that's a real dinosaur.
Yeah, well, you know, it was...
It's so believable.
It was awesome to see, you know... I was watching a documentary, and one of the things they were talking about was the kitchen scene with the two raptors. And I didn't realize this until the other day, but there are actually humans inside those. And, like, that just, you know, 10, 15 minutes of the kitchen was, like, 3 weeks of filming. Like, you know, it was just mind-boggling because Spielberg was like, I want to, you know, see the fear in motion. I want to scare the hell out of people when they see this and them be able to see themselves in this predicament.
Yeah, and I can tell you that that kitchen scene made Velociraptor scary as shit. Because, I mean, nobody even gave a damn about Velociraptors before that.
Yeah, and I don't think I'd ever heard of a Velociraptor before that.
Yeah, I remember that movie came out, I was like, Veloci, what? Veloci, that dinosaur is fucking badass.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you see...
shit opening doors and stuff, and then sneaking up on people.
And people's like, oh yeah, that thing's not even intimidating, it's only the size of a turkey. Yeah, a fucking man-eating turkey.
Well, that's the thing, is like the real Velociraptors are like the, basically chickens, big angry chickens. They're nothing like what we've seen in
Have you ever been chased around a chicken coop by a flock of angry chickens?
Oh yeah, I used to raise chickens.
Y'all are both kick those little bastards. Fucking hillbillies.
Yeah, pretty much.
And why do you think you're here, sir?
Because I'm not.
You're right. You're the one who rolled up in the big truck.
Shut up. I like that truck.
Speaking of vehicles, dude.
Moving to Dawsonville, so you're going to be hillbilly like the rest of us.
Apparently, I might as well just buy my own first pair of coveralls.
Make sure they're Carhartt.
Or Tractor Supply Company.
Yeah. I mean...
You represent the TSC.
Watching this movie again, everything really holds... Some of the CGI is a little wonky. You can tell where they use CGI versus the practical effects.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the scene where... You know, they make it back through the park, the power's out and everything, and they stop in front of the T-Rex cage. Like, I kind of got to call BS on that scene because you see the T-Rex just, you know, take down the lines and he's walking on straight ground. But you pan five, frames, and all of a sudden there's a 100-foot cliff where this T-Rex just emerged from.
Even like, earlier, when the first time they come up to the T-Rex and the goat comes out, I mean, it's their level with the fence. It looks like they're, flat ground.
Yeah, it's at ground level.
And then when, Sam Neill's, Alan Grant, and the two kids are in the truck that gets kicked over the edge. Like I said, it's like a freaking, 100-foot, 200-foot drop. Like, they actually land in the top of a big-ass tree. I'm like, wait a minute, where'd this giant hole come from that wasn't here 5 minutes ago?
Yeah, I mean, so... But, you know, watching the movie, like, now I'm watching it, and I'm looking at it from a critique aspect. Like, what things did I miss that I not pick up on as a kid? But as a kid, dude... That shit never even registered twice in my head. I'm like, oh my god, they went down this big-ass cliff. They're stuck in the tree. Like, I'm freaking the fuck out over here.
The other thing, too, the signs, it says, like, 10,000-volt fence. I'm like, that seems awfully low to be holding back dinosaurs.
Yeah, dude, I got a flashlight stun gun over here, and I'm pretty sure that thing produces more than 10,000 volts.
You're like, 8,000 is what's, like, on cow electric fences, and even a cow's is like, whatever. Well, I think an angry T-Rex, 10,000 volts is going to be like, what's that itch?
I mean, you never know, though, because... And that was one of the things that watching the new movie that I thought about is we really, because we've only recovered bones and stuff like that and been kind of like they've done some stuff in labs and speculation, nobody really knows exactly how tough their skin is or, how resilient to something like that they would be. You know, I mean, you never know. You could take down a T-Rex with an AK-47 if it's got standard, like... reptilian, like snake or lizard skin.
Maybe. I don't know. But something that big coming at me, I want something a little bit more powerful than some 00 buckshot. That's
the thing. I mean, me too, just because it's that freaking huge, but...
Yeah, the security guards, I think, were just... Even you go hunt, like, elephants and stuff, they use big-ass guns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, they just got like a couple like, Remington shotguns for their security team. I'm like,
and, we got to keep in mind, too, undergunned. That, Your premise behind dinosaurs, I could absolutely see this, but the fact that we spliced it with all these other, creatures to fulfill the DNA strand, who the hell knows what that's did to the exterior of the...
That's one thing I liked in the... Because, when this movie came out, people didn't know enough about dinosaurs that we never really called BS on anything. But now we've discovered so much new stuff that, like we said, they figured out the Velociraptor looks nothing like the raptor in the movie, and there's been so much... advancements in the science of paleontology that I like how they kind of explain that away in the new movie when B.D. Wong's character, who was the only character that's in the original movie, he is the scientist who actually makes the dinosaurs, and he's like, hey, none of these are 100% pure DNA. I mean, if we use an actual pure DNA, they would look nothing like what we have in the park. So, I mean, that kind of explained that, you know,
also prevent you from having, you know, fucking camouflaged dinosaurs, too, though. I mean.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, the first movie, Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum as Dr. Ian Malcolm, the freaking, anarchy scientist.
Yeah, I mean, he just goes straight up rogue.
Yeah, you know what really sucks is that had a slight twist of fate not occurred, Jeff Goldblum actually could have been my uncle.
What? All right, do elaborate.
Okay, Jeff Goldblum actually went to high school with my mother and her sisters. And they actually did the radio show at her high school all together. And he dated one of my aunts. And my grandfather, who was an angry, pissed off Czechoslovakian steel mill worker, threw him out for having long hair. And he never dated her again. They never went on another date. And damn. I was like, man, you know, I mean, it probably wouldn't have worked out. It was high school romance, but you never know. I mean, back then, high school sweethearts did get married.
Hey, as he says, you know, freaking chaos.
Stranger
theory.
Things have happened.
A butterfly flaps its wings, and then Eric's related to Jeff Goldblum.
I'm not related to Jeff Goldblum.
I mean, I want to point out another thing. How much of this movie, you know, did Barbasol shaving cream sales increase after the filming of Jurassic Park?
Yeah, that's the for, you know, just to refresh your memory, you know, the story of the first Jurassic Park is they've figured out how to clone dinosaur DNA from mosquitoes trapped in amber. And of course, Richard Attenborough's John Hammond decides to build a whole amusement park around it. Well, his head programmer guy, Wayne Knight from freaking Seinfeld, you know, wants to make some money, so he decides to steal a bunch of dinosaur embryos and sell it to the competition, and he smuggles them out in a specialized Barbasol shaving cream canister.
That still functions, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it has shaving cream in it and a refrigeration unit for dinosaur embryos. That's why Barbasol is the shaving cream of champions.
They've even, like, capitalized on that with the new movie. There's, like, you can get a special Jurassic Park edition Barbasol can with freaking dinosaurs on it now.
You're shitting me.
No, I've seen it. I've seen the advertisements on TV. It's hysterical.
We just got to check the bottom, see if it unscrews. Who knows what's lurking behind there?
Yeah, I mean, you could get an egg.
Usually it's probably somebody's dope
fucking
stash.
Easter egg, man.
I know, right? True meaning of the word.
Because I've always seen those fake cans at, like, you know, gas station head shops. How many, like, dopers got pissed off because they're like, oh, man, now everybody's showing or hiding our shaving cream secret?
I know. I mean, so many people had to come up with new ingenious ways of hiding their weed. It was horrible.
Yep.
I don't do that. That struggle's not real for me.
And also,
the struggle's not real.
Any sci-fi movie. Samuel Jackson is in it as the head engineer or something. And for some reason, his, like, catchphrase is, hold on to your butt. He says it like three times in that movie.
I mean, I don't know. They're aiming for the PG-13 rating, so, I mean, he couldn't just blast off with the, you know, MF bombs. I mean, and true.
I'm tired of these motherfucking dinosaurs
in a motherfucking jungle. Y'all white people are fucked. Thanks, Samuel. Congratulations on playing angry black man number 5,000.
One of his, like, you know, his mini roles in the next 20 years since this movie is, like, angry guy in Jurassic Park, angry guy in Deep Blue Sea, angry guy in Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, I mean, I think
angry guy in Die Hard.
I think the only movie he didn't play an angry, pissed off black man was Star Wars? Yes. Mace Windu knows peace, bitch.
Yeah. Hand me my lightsaber. It's the one that says bad motherfucker.
That would have been awesome.
Does Yoda look like a bitch?
Does Yoda look like a motherfucking bitch?
Yeah. I mean, great. Now we're just having too much fun.
But of course, as Wayne Knight steals the dinosaur embryos, he shuts all the power off to the park, and shit goes awry.
I mean, and dude, I gotta say, if you did this test run to know that you can do this in 18 minutes, I think I would sure as hell have the directions down on how the fuck to get from the facility to the landing dock.
Well, the problem was, you know, like a hurricane hits during the middle of his
bullshit. Escape that doesn't plan. Change the layout of the road, though. I mean,
it's like, raining hard.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you from driving on some trails and stuff like that and just having like mild to light rains come down.
Yeah.
Man, it does actually change shit pretty quick.
And that was a convenient story plot, too, to like, you know, because say that's Disney World. There's like tens of thousands of freaking employees. But, oh, a hurricane's coming. We got to get everybody off the island except for these 5 or 10 dudes to make it a little bit more claustrophobic. They're stuck on their own to make it a little bit creepier. But that was a convenient way to get rid of everybody.
I mean, that was the first thing that, you know, the first movie really brought was, you know, almost a horror experience. You know, you truly wanted to, you know, be afraid, and you were afraid for the characters at times. Whereas in, you know, the new Jurassic Park, it wasn't so much, you know, based around horrific events, you know.
That was one of the things, too, because, like, I remember this being scary as shit the first time I watched it. And now that I go back, I remembered it.
We were like knee high then.
Yeah, but I remember it being, you know, a lot more bloodier. But then most of the kills and stuff happen off screen. You know, you get like people's reactions to seeing what's probably something pretty nasty, but you don't actually see, like, I mean, the bloodiest thing you see is like Samuel Jackson's severed arm. I mean, and the rest of it's all done kind of off screen.
I don't know.
Even when
the goat leg was pretty gruesome, just falling on top of the vehicle.
Yeah, even when freaking Wayne Knight gets killed. He gets killed in the truck, and all you see is the truck like shaking back and forth. You don't really see any other than getting like that black goose spit in his face.
Dude, and I gotta say, I let my grandma watch Jurassic Park, or actually I was like, Grandma, let's go rent this movie, blah blah blah. It's back when, you know, stores actually had VHS tapes and stuff before
back
the digital
in my
age.
Day.
Yep. So a little throwback there. But anyway, I was like, Grandma, you gotta watch this movie with me, blah blah blah. So it gets to that scene, and I just made this, like, gagging noise as the dinosaurs... Dude, my grandma puked all over the place. It was awesome.
Nice.
Now we know what kind of asshole Brad is.
And that's the thing,
my I've got a lifetime of experience.
That's the thing.
It's the one thing I've done right in life.
I think I helped shape that.
Is these Jurassic Park movies, you know, the actual book is a lot bloodier, a lot more violent, but being Steven Spielberg,
a lot more harsh language, too. Yeah, I think that was one reason I liked
it. He kidded it up a lot more. I mean, in every movie, there's got to be some kind of kid in danger, and it's just a little, it's always something it's scary, but you can see it with your family or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, we took the girls. I mean, they're 10 to see Jurassic World. I mean.
Oh, yeah, when we went to the, it was actually one of the movie girls. And which I love going to see movies there because, hey, you're going to spend $50-$60. Why not?
I hate to break it to you. You're going to spend that much anyway.
Right. I mean, so it's like, why not get a cheeseburger and a beer with it? You know?
No doubt.
And it's way more comfortable. But, yeah, we took my fiance's, you know, her daughter's like 8, and we took her to see it. And I mean, no nightmares, no nothing crazy. I mean, she loved the movie. And she really enjoyed going with us. So
it was weird, you know. It was that was probably the most packed movie that I had, you know, personally seen. Because I guess it being opening night and all the shows being sold, we went and saw it in IMAX, and we were like on the second row of the IMAX. So, you know, in theory, we had shitty seats, but at the same time, it was awesome because it really put the characters and the dinosaurs in scale. Because you were having to literally look up at the motherfuckers, and you're like, dude, that's a big-ass dino.
Yeah, how long did it take to get the crick out of your neck? You know?
I think I'm still working on it. That between the crick in the neck and the old man knees.
we know how he got the old man knees.
Anyway, pretty much like the now rewatch all these, like all of these Jurassic Park movies has like a, except for maybe the third one, has like the central theme of greed causing man's downfall. I mean, the park things, well, you know, first they're greedy by wanting to, you know, capitalize on dinosaurs, but then, you know, the character that steals the embryos and causes everything to go to shit, I mean, his greed, it's, you know, man thinking they can play God and build dinosaurs, and man being greedy when those two things clash.
I mean, that analogy is actually read out, you know, in the first film, you know. You know, God creates dinosaur, you know, God kills dinosaur. God creates man. Man creates dinosaur. And then, you know.
Dinosaur eats man.
And woman inherits the earth. And woman inherits earth. So, I mean, you know, it's almost kind of going back to, you know, I'm not a religious person or whatever, but, you know, when humans decide that, hey, you know, we're going to kind of take the role of nature and do things that we don't have the ability to contain or to control.
And we talked about that during our disaster movie episode where, you know, a lot of the times these things are caused by somebody thinking they know better and can improve on something and everything goes wrong.
Like, I mean, I'm all about evolution, people getting smarter and trying different things, but, you know, fuck. You know, if we're going to fuck up the entire human race, let's at least do it right.
Nuclear weapons.
Oh, yeah, this movie, they made it for $63 million. It made $1.029 billion. So, yeah, they definitely made their money back on that. Plus the merch. I remember when that first one came out, there was so much merchandising,
dude,
toys, t-shirts.
Who didn't have a Jurassic Park lunchbox after that film?
Yeah,
I didn't.
They made like stupid
besides
amounts
Eric
of money. And then, you know, 1997, we got Jurassic Park 2. You know, none of the, you know, the original, whatever, Sam Neill and, you know, Laura Dern did not return, but we had Jeff Goldblum in his own Jurassic Park movie now. He gets to be the only star.
Yeah, you know, and right. From my childhood, I always remember Jeff Goldblum's character as kind of being the evil guy, but not so much after I went back and watched these. I was like, you know what? I always thought he was an asshole, but he was the only one that had a little bit of logic and common sense enough to ask, why the fuck are we doing this again?
Yeah, he's the only one that is making dinosaurs is bad. Have none of y'all figured that out yet? Second movie, basically the story of it is, you know, they intended all the dinosaurs to die out. They bred them where they, you know, wouldn't produce a certain enzyme, so they should have all died, but they didn't. And then there was a secondary Jurassic Park site where they basically bred the dinosaurs, and Jeff Goldblum finds out his girlfriend has gone to study the dinosaurs, so he leads a team who is supposed to go and study the dinosaurs in their natural habitat. But John Hammond getting older and someone pretty much takes over his company, and they decide to pull, you know, go hunt the dinosaurs and you know, capture them and put them in a zoo.
Yeah, we're
going
to try to, and let's make the zoo not only in an island in the middle of, no, let's bring it right to the heart of San Francisco. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, this kind of reminds me, if you remember the old John Wayne movie, Hatari, where he's like a big game hunter that basically goes out and hunts game for zoos. So he captures, like, you know, tigers, lions, elephants, all this other stuff. And that's kind of how that, when they first get there and start trying to capture all the dinosaurs before shit goes bad, it kind of reminded me of that movie.
Yeah, and I, you know, I like the fact, too, you know, kind of going back to the DNA splicing where, you know, once again, the whole reason the dinosaurs were able to breed is, you know, they used some version of frog that, you know, was like, hey, in a pinch, this thing can reproduce asexually or
change
its sex.
Yeah, originally they were all supposed to be female. But then I said, since they used amphibian DNA, they switched that. And, you know, these by, you know, nature finds a way, even though they were supposed to die out because they didn't have this enzyme, the plant eaters ate plants that were high in that enzyme. And then the meat eaters ate the plant eaters. And you know, everybody continued to stay alive and and prosper.
Yeah, I still think the human race is a virus.
I tend to agree with that. And, I mean, you know, that touches on a whole other movie series that,
yes,
you know, the whole Matrix thing.
Matrix with dinosaurs.
That'd be awesome. I want to see Agent Anderson tear up some dinosaurs.
Cool. Yeah, in this movie, we also saw, you know, Vince Vaughn as Nick, the photographer slash eco-terrorist that they sit right in to sabotage the corporate dino hunters. Which, again, this falls into that, like I said, that theme of greed being man's downfall is because the corporate guys get greedy and want to, you know, go get all these dinosaurs and, you know.
Damn it, free market systems.
They just left the dinosaurs alone. Nothing would have happened. But then, and I can't remember his name, but he's the crazy Russian guy that he was in friggin' Armageddon, friggin' Bad Boys. He's like the asshole Russian guy in like every movie. He's one of the hunters, and he's like a complete dick and like stuns a freaking dinosaur. And then when he gets eaten by like the horde of little dinosaurs, it's
yeah,
pretty hilarious.
It was self-deserving at that point. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I got geckos and shit like that, and I always joke around. I'm like, oh, look at that, the little dinosaurs, you know.
Until they eat you in your sleep.
It'll be okay.
And then, of course, raptors are a return. Because you rep that was the other thing too. They had to up the level. So first Jurassic Park, T-Rex and Raptors, but in second Jurassic Park we get two T-Rexes and more Raptors. So I mean they got to keep upping that the wow.
Dude, and the T-Rexes just happening to be a mating couple that are there protecting their young and yeah. That's not good. Like, they don't understand that you're trying to help the baby after, the other humans have fucked over said baby.
Yeah, and of course, Jeff Goldblum's daughter, sneaks aboard because there has to be a kid that's in danger in any of the Jurassic Park movies. Because, no one cares about adults, but you put a cute child in harm's way. Everyone's like, oh no, somebody's getting eaten.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You don't ever see the death of little kids.
Yeah. And that's another thing too. Like I said, again, there was a few a little bit bloodier scenes, but not that many. And most of the stuff, again, happened off camera.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of just the peril on trying to survive after your freaking camper gets pushed over a cliff. And I don't know. I think personally, if I was in that situation, I would just take in the high hide and I would just chill it up there.
Yeah, tell those helicopters come back and get us the hell out of here. We're like, no, we're not doing that.
We're cigar nerds. I mean, we could have just lit up and,
just try to scare them.
They're right there on Costa Rica. I mean, I'm sure we could have found some tobacco of some kind.
Probably.
Another thing cool about this when they made it was the... Michael Crichton really didn't write sequels to books. He was like a one-and-done kind of guy, but Spielberg was like, you've got to write another book because I want to option another book to make a movie. So pretty much Spielberg talked him into writing to The Lost World. And yeah, The Lost World, to some people, is even better than the original Jurassic Park book. I know you said that was one of your favorite books.
Yeah, I mean, the Lost World, dude, I probably picked that thing up when I was in maybe 5th grade or something like that. I mean, I begged my mom to buy it, and it was like a $20 book at the time, and she's like, I can't justify paying $20 on a book. And I remembered reading it, and I was like, Mom, you have to read this. And she's like, I don't even like stuff, it's not written by Danielle Still. And anyway, she ended up reading it and actually really enjoyed the book herself. So I mean, there's so many details and descriptions, and your imagination has more freedom to roam, more so than, the visual stimulus of something on, a television screen. So I think for me, that's what really, helped make the movies.
And there was a few scenes in this movie that were basically stuff from the first book that they didn't use in the first movie. Like, for example, the opening scene where they're the little girl's on the beach and gets attacked by the little dinosaurs. That was from the first book. And then when they're all hiding in the waterfall and the T-Rex is like sticking its head through the waterfall, that was another scene from the first book. Imagine the shit, dude.
You're in the waterfall, you're already in peril, and then a fucking snake drops down. And
well, it's funny, that guy that gets eaten in that scene, I'd read a story that I can't remember his name, but the guy who was the technical advisor to the movie, him and another scientist kind of argued, where one of them was like, the dinosaurs weren't hunters, they were just kind of scavengers, and the other guy was like, nah, T-Rex is like very violent. And so the character that's get eaten was based off the competing scientist that said T-Rexes were like violent. And it kind of, and even when he saw that scene, recognized that it was him, and like, called his buddy that he's like, see, I told you they were violent. I got fucking eaten in that movie.
Dude, how awesome. I mean, I've always wanted to be a part of a horror movie or something like that. I mean, just to, be able to see the special effects and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes into the making and creation of those types of films. I mean, I know you, with your haunted house experience and stuff, get to see a lot of that firsthand. But, I think that would just be awesome to be able to kick back and be like, holy shit, I died, but I'm still breathing.
Oh, yeah, I need to be in more horror movies. Maybe I can get into, Zombieland 2 when it comes around.
I don't know. I hear The Life of Joe is pretty scary.
It is.
It is. I'm still just kind of floored that Brad can actually read.
I know, man. I mean, it's one of those things. It's not a widely known conception. I'll try to keep it under wraps.
I know.
It's almost like a defense mechanism, right? Because it just gives people an excuse to underestimate me, and then I come over the top and just absolutely dominate. And they're like, where the fuck did that come from?
Every once in a while, he uses a big word and actually pronounces it correctly, and it's amazing when it happens.
It's
like a miracle.
I usually have a little bit of a, I think it's a palpitation, whenever that happens.
Yeah, that's one of the rules we say when we're going to write the drinking game for this podcast is when Brad mispronounces something, you have to take a drink. I think you have to take two drinks if he pronounces something like correctly.
Yeah,
a large word,
and if something really strong like tequila or whiskey or you know something stronger or whatever.
But
I mean, we're pretty much pirates, so I'm going to recommend 151 or you know something of that nature.
No bueno. But the end of this movie too is they bring the T-Rex back, and for some reason like it gets out and kills everyone on the ship. Like it's a big freaking dinosaur. You couldn't have hidden in a closet somewhere.
Well, I mean the whole premise behind the T-Rex is once again we go back to the kid. Like you know you freaking kidnapped the kid. Like all you had to do was leave the baby dinosaur in the cargo bay with the adult. San Francisco probably would have been okay.
But the that thing is they doped it up too much and it stopped breathing at some point, so they tried to inject it with basically adrenaline to wake it back up, and basically you got a roid rage dinosaur on your hands. And at the end, that whole like last 20 minutes of the movie turns into like a weird freaking Godzilla type. There's even a joke about Godzilla because you see a whole bunch of Chinese tourists running down the street. I believe one of them even says Godzilla as they're running away, and the T-Rex is chasing people through San Francisco.
So if Joe can't pronounce raged, does that mean we have to take three drinks or four? Because that was really damn simple.
I've been drinking. Fuck off.
I'm going to make you guys hate me.
Your first and last guest.
Right. I'll never be invited back.
And that brings us to probably the worst of the Jurassic Park movies, 2001's Jurassic Park 3.
Never saw it.
You didn't miss much.
No. Still haven't seen it.
Yeah, this movie just did not do it for me. It didn't have the heart, the emotion, or anything that the other two, you know, predecessors. There's
right,
another drink.
Right, yep. Drink some, buddy.
Well, I mean, this movie was not based on a book.
It's the listeners that drink, not us. We've drank enough.
I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, this
we will fix that.
This is the first one that's not based on a Michael Crichton novel. It was not directed by Steven Spielberg. He was just executive producer on this one. And it really, like I said, it really didn't have that heart or feel of the other movies. Like I said, all the other movies, even the newest one, had that greed and man dicking with nature downfall, and this one was basically a rescue story. Kid is parasailing, or they've turned the site B from the second movie into some kind of like tourist thing where you can actually parasail over the island and see dinosaurs, and dinosaurs eat the ship crew, so the kid crashes on the island, and now this like 10-12 year old boy is stuck on the island by himself. So the parents hire a bunch of mercenaries and kidnap Dr. Neil from the first movie and try to get them to go back and rescue the kid, and of course, bad shit happens.
That plot alone really just makes me not want to watch the movie and go drink more beer and find some hookers.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, is, you know, this film, it had so much to be desired, but, you know, once again, I think it was just basically, oh, these other two films were successful. Let me piggyback off their success. And I think they did a franchise, you know, an injustice, you know, with that film. I mean, I
and of course, like you up the ante another time. This time they've introduced another dinosaur that is, you know, bigger than the Jurassic, the T-Rex. So, yeah, they have to, you know, that's the new new big bad dinosaur, because you got to up it every time. And it's a
it wasn't based on the Allosaurus, was it?
It might have been. I freaking can't find it in my notes now. But yeah, that, like I said, it was, you know, they even have a fight scene with that new dinosaur that follows them around through the whole movie, and the T-Rex, and it kills the T-Rex to show, all right, this is the new big bad of the movie. And once again, raptors.
Always raptors. If you don't have raptors, then you ain't got shit.
And this time the raptors are like super smart, because freaking Dr. Neagle's sidekick, I believe his name is Billy, he steals some raptor eggs because he thinks he can make some money selling them off to support their archaeological
efforts. Once again,
efforts.
We didn't learn from the first film. Probably a bad idea.
So now, a whole like family of raptors are trying to hunt them down. And they even take one of the one of the mercenaries and make a trap with him, and like, you know, they injure him and leave him out there for them to try to come rescue him and then ambush everybody and like just snap his neck instead of eating him. I mean, it's it's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really could not get into this third film, and I don't have a whole lot to say about it, unfortunately, that's very positive. I will say the fact of pterodactyls being able to pick you up and, you know, just carry you away is, you know, probably I would be more in fear of that more so than the T-Rex, because I think if a T-Rex gets a hold of me, it's going to be quick.
That was one of the things of this movie, is that, you know, for the first time, you do see the flying dinosaurs. You didn't really see any pterodactyls or whatever in, you know, the other Jurassic Parks. And again, that's something that, even though this wasn't based off of a Michael Crichton novel, there still was some scenes from the previous novels that didn't make it into the previous movies that they used in this one. Like, there's a scene where they're, you know, riding down the... They finally find an old boat, and they're, you know, going down the river trying to get away from the dinosaurs. And, you know, that was something from the previous books, and also the whole scene inside the aviary with the flying dinosaurs. That
at this point you want to take a drink because I pronounced it correctly.
Yep.
You know, if I had one.
Damn it! We got to get a Nerd Cave fridge down here.
Yeah, everything's still upstairs.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, this one was written by
First World Problems.
I know.
Was written by Cope. So yeah, it's like it. Nothing based on the originals. I mean, it's completely whole new crew involved. So it just not my favorite. The only thing that's cool is that you did get to see the original characters that you didn't see in the second movie. Laura Dern's character is now married to some freaking political guy, and that pretty much saves him, because, you know, they're on this island that's basically, you can't be on the island. I mean, it's completely, whatever, barricaded off pretty much.
Yeah, you know, restricted access.
Yeah, like the government's like, hey, you're on the island. It's your own ass. But they managed to call home girl and say, hey, we're trapped by dinosaurs again because we're dumbasses. And then, you know, the freaking Navy SEALs show up and and rescue them at the end.
And if you haven't seen the third movie, like you said, now you've seen it. How do you feel?
I just think they should change the name to Jurassic Park Navy SEALs.
That would have made it cooler.
Yeah, and it would have, and then they could have, the Navy SEALs could have driven golf carts through the through the park and just wallop dinosaurs with golf clubs. It would have been amazing.
I mean, this one did have William H. Macy, Tia Leone. So it had
a big name cast from that standpoint, yeah. But just the overall writing and the premise behind the film, I mean, it just left so much lacking and so much to be desired.
I did like the kid, because the kid, like, you know, was like this freaking little MacGyver genius, and he survived on the island all this time. And
the kid later on grows up to become Bear Grylls.
Yeah, pretty much. And when he finally meets Sam Neill's character, he's like, he's like, oh yeah, I've read your books. And he's like, I didn't like the second one as much. And he's like, why not? And he's like, well, the first one you liked dinosaurs, and the second one, you know, you just kind of, you know, didn't like him anymore. He's like, yeah, that'll happen if you get chased by him, kid. And he's like, well, just read Malcolm's book. And he's like, yeah, too much chaos stuff. That dude's like just chaos. It's kind of funny. They're just, you know, making fun of
throwbacks to the first two films. Yep.
Yeah. But then we take some time off and get to the best of the movies, or at least the most current, Jurassic World.
Yeah, I mean, the hype behind this movie, I mean, dude, how many episodes did we do, you know, leading up to this, you know, where we're like, oh, this was just announced, this person will be playing in Jurassic World and everything else. I mean, there were quite a few segments where we followed, you know, this film extensively, and you know, I got to say, I was thoroughly, you know, pleased, because this film actually lived up to the hype, and it, you know, it decimated the third film. Like, I compare the third Jurassic Park to the third Halloween movie.
Yeah. I mean, this one, directed by Colin Trevorrow, who is, I mean, he did a damn good job. I mean, still, you know, Spielberg was just a EP on this, but But yeah, I definitely love this a lot more than that third one. It felt truer to that original theme of...
You just liked it for Star-Lord, don't lie.
Dude, Chris Pratt's a bad mofo. I mean, I can't...
Oh, yeah. He's really... Seeing him from, like, Parks and Rec and some of the other stuff he's done.
You're like, where did the other guy go?
Yeah, where he's, like, this bumbling idiot. And then Guardians of the Galaxy, it's like, okay, well, he's half bumbling idiot, but he's also half badass. And then in this movie where it's like, okay, well, he's a funny badass. Just, yeah. I mean, like, I've really enjoyed seeing him kind of blossom as an actor through the movies and TV shows.
Even when he's riding the motorcycles with the Raptors, and those kids are like, dude, your boyfriend's a badass.
Like, I love that scene where, you know, it's, you know, what is she? Is she the aunt or something to the kids? Anyway, like, the kids are like, we never want to be left alone again. And she's like, don't worry, I won't leave you alone. Like, no, not with you. We want to be with him.
Yeah, right?
And she's like, yeah, let's stay with him. Yeah. This movie, it's same as the movie. I mean, it's 22 years later. And now we see what we've kind of always wanted to see. Jurassic Park is open and has been in operation for, you know, several years, apparently. This is not like the first day of the park. They've been, you know, it's what you assumed Jurassic Park would have been once it was, like, fully operational. I mean, it's the freaking Disney World of dinosaur zoos.
Yeah, the only thing, though, is I was a little bit confused by this film because at least in the first film, it explained interactive DV-ROMs. This time around... Not so much. I mean,
that was the one thing from the first one. When I was watching, I'm like, man, this is so like early 90s because they thought it was important enough to explain what an interactive CD-ROM was. The girl's like, oh, cool, it's an interactive CD-ROM. It's got touchscreen. Because I'm like, nobody knew what that was then. But now I'm like, now people going back and watching won't have any clue what that is because we don't use CD-ROMs anymore.
Right.
Kids are like, what? CD what?
Now I did, in watching the movie, I missed something, or maybe didn't miss anything. I didn't know, did they actually, like, say or give any clues as to how long it had been open and in operation?
Not really.
I mean, I know they mentioned several years, like, oh, every year we've got to do something bigger,
better. Yeah, that's about as much as they said. Well, every time we've introduced a new exhibit, attendance has grown, but they've really not said how long that park has actually been in existence, but... From the looks of it, it's been there for a while.
Right, right. I mean, it's a smooth, running operation that, you know, the security guys know their drills and stuff like that.
This is the first movie where they actually had guns that were, you think, could probably take down a dinosaur, except for those taser rifles they tried out at the beginning, and they're like, you're freaking getting everybody killed. But, you know, they had like a helicopter with freaking, you know, miniguns on it. You know, they weren't underestimating the dinosaurs this time around. But yeah, I mean, that was so cool because it does look like, I mean, with the monorail and all that, you're like, this could be a freaking Disney park.
Well, no, I mean, that's exactly what I thought when I saw the monorail. I was like, I was just at Disney last year, and that reminds me very much of the monorail that runs across the resorts and stuff.
And it goes through that big gate where they're like, oh, it's made from reclaimed wood from the original park. I mean, it looks like the freaking original doorway into the park.
I mean, I loved the subtle throwbacks, and I didn't realize until I started doing research on web how much of, you know, stuff from the first film was, you know, like Jeep 42, the one they rode away with. That was, you know, one of the Jeeps from the first film. The night vision goggles that are laying on the desk.
Right. Yeah, because, like I said, this movie, of course, like I said, the park is now open, and... They're doing some experiments with trying to train raptors, which, again, falls back to that theme of people getting greedy. You know, to Chris Pratt, who's been training these guys, this is kind of just a cool experiment. But the engine, the one that that actually owns the technology of creating the dinosaurs, are trying to weaponize dinosaurs, unbeknownst to anybody who's involved with the park. And what the park is, you know, come up with a new genetically modified dinosaur is actually... turns out to be a full-on bioweapon that they've built. So this thing has, you know, freaking camouflage and is, like, you know, bigger than a T-Rex and just all these, like, nasty features. But they don't even know really what all is, like, made out of it.
Well, I think somebody knows what's made out of it, but they're secretly, you know, they're concealing because they know that they've used Velociraptor and some of this other stuff. And, you know, Chris Pratt trying to... you know, become the alpha of, you know, his little pack of raptors, you know, all of a sudden you're no longer big man on the totem pole.
Yeah, I mean, this, like I said, the whole, you know, everything was running smoothly till somebody got greedy. You know, the people running the park got greedy because they're like, oh, we want this, a new, bigger attraction. And then the company got greedy. We're like, hey, we could sell these to, like, the military. And when those two cross, shit goes real bad. Because I've been, like, and this is the first time you've really seen destruction on a big scale. Normally, it's like, you know, 5 or 10 guys in the jungle. Now it's a park with a couple hundred thousand, was it 22,000 people, I think, is the count they give in the movie of how many attendants they have that day. And like I said, it's, and they're still on a freaking island, so ain't a whole lot.
I mean, they had some celebrity attendances that day too. I mean, you know, yeah. Jimmy Buffett, you know, when he you know, freaking covers some margaritas and takes off running.
Did you notice that the freaking Jimmy Buffett is?
Yeah, we were laughing about that.
There's a Margaritaville in the food court, and when the pterodactyls, whatever, you know, come raiding the island, you know, everyone's running for cover, and this one dude grabs his margaritas before he runs, and it's freaking Jimmy Buffett. Because, of course, that's what you're going to do. You're not going to leave your drink behind. I mean, if you're going to die, you might as well, you know, finish your drink.
Especially playing theme park prices. Like, I can only imagine what a margarita at Jurassic World would cost.
Yeah, it's probably about the same as a margarita in Dubai. I mean, it'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, but, I think the coolest thing of that movie that sold it for me was what I called the SWAT Raptors. Because their big plan to stop the Indominus Rex, as they call it, is used Chris Pratt's weaponized raptors to try to hunt him down. So dude's riding his badass Indian motorcycle chasing down freaking Indominus Rex with the raptors in tow.
Didn't they actually, you know... Didn't somebody do an interview with Chris Pratt and they actually ended up giving him the motorcycle from the film?
Yeah, because that was like a one-of-a-kind motorcycle made for that movie, and they end up giving it to him at the premiere or whatever. So I was like, that's pretty badass.
I mean, if he really rode that thing over any form of jungle terrain, that's a badass rider right there. I mean, I was watching that. I'm just
dude,
like,
I don't think I could make it. You've put me on a freaking YZ250 that's made for off-road. Hell, yeah. I wouldn't have made it over some of those logs and shit.
Right. I'm just like, holy hell. Not only is he keeping up and running with this pack of raptors, but, you know, he's holding this bike up. And I'm like, good God, that's got to be a pain in the ass.
And he just looks badass with that freaking Marlin, whatever, 4570 lever action. Like,
oh, yeah.
Some serious John Wayne shit out there hunting dinosaurs. Oh, yeah.
All right, that's it. We're gonna get we're all gonna get 45s by the time this episode ends.
I mean, yeah. Well, he was. I think those were what 45 long Colt Magnums, the bullets.
Yeah, that or like the 4570s. I mean, it was a big damn bullet.
Yeah, I mean, it was big. It wasn't quite 50 cal big, but I mean, the cartridge on that thing had to be like
I think
2.5 inches, 3 inches.
Got some stopping power on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, his Raptors, was it Charlie, Delta, and Echo?
Mm-hmm. Well, Beta, Charlie, Delta.
Yeah. Well, but Beta called Blue because it had the blue tint to it.
Yeah.
And like it was kind of, it reminded me of like a pack of dogs too, especially like when the one guy falls into the raptor pit and he has to save him, and he's like, whatever you do, don't turn your back on the cage. He's like, what? And he turns around and the raptor's got his face to the cage just like a freaking hungry dog, like, I'm gonna bite you, asshole.
Right.
Yeah, like Brad's pit bull when it was like, you know, humping your leg earlier.
I didn't really so much hump my leg as grindle the hell out of me and nut punch me a couple times. It's like, welcome to Brad's house, nut punch, nut punch, nut punch.
You know you're welcome at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I felt very welcome.
Yeah, you learn to guard yourself when you come in the nerd game.
You are now a member of the pack officially.
Right, I almost gave your dog $20 too. I mean, it was...
It's like, man, I didn't realize I was going to come over here and actually get action. I thought I was giving up action to podcasts.
Right, I mean, you know, I mean, normally the going rate on a, you know, nut punch is $20.
But, yeah, like you were saying a while ago, the shout-outs to the original movie, too, were so good. I mean, the scene where the kids are in the little ball of death thing in the Indominus Rex is, you know, kind of clawing through it. That it's so much like that original scene where the T-Rex is trying to get into the glass-top Ford Explorer and they're, you know, holding
and
up
I'm
the
sorry,
glass
dude,
and stuff.
If a T-Rex has already been through that much still, like, that little piece of glass isn't going to do a whole hell of a lot. Like, it would have been all over.
I mean, when those other dinosaurs are just batting them around like a freaking ping pong ball, that was kind of hilarious. And then when
I was waiting on them to set up a makeshift soccer goal or something. I mean,
yeah.
You know, is there a Raptors soccer team by chance? I mean,
I think there is.
There should be.
But when they run through the jungle trying to get away, they find the – because the original park is on, like, the other side of the island. And then they actually find that original building from the first movie. And it looks like it probably should today because it's been abandoned for 20 years. Everything's all kind of run down. But you still see it like, oh, my God, this is the original spot. They find that banner that you see falling at the first of the movie, and you even see the night vision goggles, and they find one of the original like 92 Jeep Wranglers.
I mean, if that Jeep has sat there for 22 years and those kids got it running in the space of like 15 minutes,
freaking little MacGyvers. Well, dude,
honestly, I would hire those kids to work on any of my cars.
I mean, but you got to think. You know, chances are that Jeep, it's not all computerized like today's cars. So, I mean, you know, you replace a battery or something. I mean, there's not a whole hell
of a... Which they did. No.
Yeah, I mean...
No. I mean, the thing is, like, that's one of the things...
tires would have been dry-rotted and flat.
Well, yeah, I mean, probably. The tires would be dry-rotted and flat. After 22 years, that entire motor...
Spark plugs probably are.
I mean, there would be no oil in that motor. The oil that would be left in there would be nothing but sludge by this point from having not been circulated. I mean, that thing would... You would not be able to get it running without a full, like, probably several days to week-long overhaul. But, I mean, hey, you know what?
Welcome to movie magic.
Right. I mean, kudos to the kids for having movie magic. And I did like the fact that they put in the dialogue of, hey, you know, this is like getting dad's old thing running with the project. Let's get to it. And, I mean, it showed them working on it for a little while. So
they might have been – that was like the original garage. They might have been some spare parts laying around or whatever. And that was a cool thing, too, is that the younger kid's character was, I guess, a little autistic or whatever, because he like knew a lot of facts and figures and stuff, so he may have had that mechanical knack in his brain.
They gave you enough for a suspension of disbelief. Yes. So that, I mean, I'm sitting there going, this is a little bit far-fetched, but I'm glad they put these dialogue options in there. And then later on, when Chris Pratt and what's her name, they show up at the garage, and he's like, oh, they took one of the Jeeps. And they're like, how the hell did they get it running? And then they look at the other Jeep, and it's been cannibalized for parts. They're like, oh, shit. You know?
Yeah, we're screwed now. But then, like I said, the references keep continuing. I like when they get back to the new Jurassic Park. They confuse one of the spoiler alert, the raptors turn on them because the T-Rex is part raptor. And he's like, uh-oh, this is the new alpha now. So now they're listening to T-Rex instead of Chris Pratt. And they confuse it with they've got this whole a holographic dinosaur thing exhibit, and they use that spitter dinosaur from the first movie to confuse the raptor.
What is that, the Dilophosaurus? Or...
I think so.
I don't know.
If I remember,
come on, man, you're the reptile breeder.
I'm sorry, I left my fucking paleontology degree back at home. Jesus. No, I can't remember exactly what
that too. And when they first get there, they're playing around with the little computer exhibits, and they have the Mr. DNA animation from the original movie. And there's all these, you know, because the original guy who played Hammond passed away, I think, last year or 2013. But they have like statues of him all over the park, so it's like he's still part of the whole thing. I mean, there's just so many little references to that first movie that I think made it even better.
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, that shows heart in the people who are making the movie, because they said this guy played such a role in the beginning and stuff like that, and he's passed away. Let's make something memorable for him, you know, to say, hey, we, you know, this guy was a good actor and we loved him, and, you know, he was here for our movies.
Yeah, I mean, John Hammond's character was so vital. I mean, I mean, just the dialogue and everything. I mean, you just genuinely, I mean...
And even the and I can't remember his name now.
I can see
him
being my own grandpa or something. Like, come on, kids, we're going to a theme park.
But the guy who pretty much owns Jurassic Park at this point, this your rich and you know developer and stuff. You know, basically, he's like the the guy who owns Virgin Airlines. You know, Richard Branson. He's like the Richard Branson of the Dino World. But he's like, yo, I made John Hammond a promise on his deathbed. He made me promise that I would actually fulfill his dream and make this park a reality. And yeah, that's why I money's not important to me. I wanted to do this for him because that was his dying wish. And I mean, thought that was really,
that was one
really
thing
cool
that this movie had a lot of heart with is, yeah, there was a weaponizing of the dinosaurs and stuff like that from, you know, other facets, but some of it was just genuine. Hey, we want to give people a good, safe time, and there was, you know, for the first time out of all the films, it wasn't, hey, how much money can we make off of this? It was, let's give people a good, safe refuge so they can come and experience something they're never going to see.
And that's another thing that was cool. Like, when I was writing down my impressions of the movies, I was like, this is the first director. This is a pretty poorly designed park, because I'm like, how are people going to see these dinosaurs? You know, they're on that little, you know, automatic tramway with the car, and I'm like, and the dinosaurs are in these big, vast enclosures. How are you going to guarantee the dinosaurs are going to be close enough for anyone to even see? And you even see that, because the first couple exhibits they get, they don't see anything because the dinosaurs are nowhere near the fence. And they kind of corrected those problems in the new Jurassic Park, like the T-Rex exhibit. There was like a, you know, a disguised viewway that was inside like a tree, so people could actually get up close and see the dinosaurs, or those ball things where they could actually drive up to the
Well, I thought, you know, the one of the opening dinosaurs. Scenes, you know, I forgot the dinosaur, but basically it throws a reference to Jaws when yes. they drop the great white shark, and then you see, you know, all the looks sands like, and stuff submerge, and you get the underwater view.
Yeah. But when it comes up out of the water to eat the shark, it looks almost like when Jaws comes up out of the water, when he's like throwing chum over the side. If you watch those two scenes side by side, it's almost the exact same thing. So it's definitely a reference to Spielberg's.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, he's EP, so you know, it's gonna be in there.
And even that tube they're in the T-Rex exhibit kind of reminds me of that from Jaws 3 when they're in that underwater tube.
Right.
And also, like I said, the last third of this movie when they're like, they finally, Chris Pratt gets back control of his dinosaurs, and you're like, you know, that's my boy Blue, and they're like, we don't have enough teeth so they free the T-Rex, and then it turns into a straight up big monster battle. It's like fucking Godzilla versus Mothra, where Indominus Rex versus T-Rex in the Raptors.
And that was one thing, you know, that was probably one of the only disappointing things, is the way that fight kind of played out. Like, it's not what I expected at all. Like, if I was directing the film, I don't think that's the direction I would have taken it.
Oh, no, that was a pretty badass fight scene. And even that is supposed to be the original T-Rex from the first Jurassic Park.
Yeah, because you see the scars from the original Raptor battle.
I thought that was real cool, too, to bring
him back. And the fact that, too, she, you know, she lures the T-Rex using the flare just like,
you know,
Goldblum did in the first film. So.
Yeah. I mean, that was more of the throwbacks to the first movie that they had. And, I mean, I noticed the scars, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember those from the first movie, even though it's been, couldn't even tell you how many years since I've seen it. I'm like, yeah, that's where those scars should have been. And then, I mean, to me, the only thing I can say about, you know, the battle between T-Rex and Dominus Rex, like, it was almost kind of a lot more drawn out than it should have been, was how I felt. But I didn't mind the ending of the fight. I didn't mind the way it turned out. I didn't mind some of the
luring it into the fish tank.
Right. I mean, I didn't mind some of that, but I was like, you know, technically, three raptors and a T-Rex against one dinosaur, it's not going to last that long.
Well, the other two raptors have already been killed, so it's just the one raptor and the T-Rex.
Well, I mean, like, I tried to compare it to like a boxing match. Like, this corner, you have Indominus Rex with a reach of, you know, 60 inches. This corner, you have a T-Rex with a reach of, you know, 36 inches or something. I'm like trying to compare it to a boxing match.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I mean, but
this basically, Indominus Rex was a T-Rex with long arms. That's pretty much what he was.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Indominus Rex, I mean, just visually guessing, you know, because they did tell you some of the genetics they spliced in there and whatnot, like the cuttlefish, and they even make the statement in there with its genetics. They're like, we spliced a bunch of shit in here. We don't know. And when they said, well, it has thermal camouflaging and visual camouflaging, the guy was like, well, we put the cuttlefish DNA in there to get it to get advanced growth, but it's given it the side benefit of it has this camouflage now.
Yeah, he tries to play it off like, oh, that's all this accidents of the genetic manipulation, but then you find out later on that, oh no, that was designed. It was supposed to be a weapon, and we did this intentionally.
And I mean, one of the things to actually kind of, you know, almost play devil's advocate against myself is that, you know, the Indominus Rex, if you look at it, and if you kind of know some of your dinosaurs and stuff, the Indominus Rex had Stegosaurus plating on its back.
Yeah, that thing was like freaking nasty. It was all armored up.
And so, I mean, you can tell, okay, well, with a Velociraptor jumping on its back, it's just going to piss it off. But then the T-Rex should have been able to get up underneath. And I mean, the, you know, reptiles and things like that, they have an instinct. They know where to bite. They know where to go. I mean, even dog fights and stuff, they know to go for the throat. And the minute that thing, you know, opened its throat up, that T-Rex would have been in there. Yeah.
Once they got, like, teamed up together, it was the fight was over at that point. And then, like, after the fight, too, the T-Rex and the raptor that should not be getting along, they kind of look at you like, all right, yeah, you're my homie now. You had my back. And then he even looks at, like, Chris Pratt again and was like, all right, you're still the alpha. Yeah, I'm out, dude. Yeah. You're my, like, boy, Blue.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally when the movie wrapped up and the credits rolled. I mean, that was the first thing I yelled at in the theater. Rachel's like, what's this throwback to? Old school.
Yeah. And with that, we're about to need to wrap it up here. So any final thoughts, Brad?
I mean, just my final thoughts is it was an awesome movie. You know, if you folks haven't seen it yet, I'm sorry for the shit that got spoiled, but get your asses in gear and go see it.
Eric, any final thoughts on Dinosaur Shiznit?
I mean, I think it was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. Entertainment value and everything else. One of the things, you know, I've heard some of the negative criticism about people saying, oh, it's just like all the others. I'm sorry, but if you go to see Jurassic World and you think it's not going to have a lot of elements of all the other movies, you're a fucking jackass.
Yeah.
And that's and honestly, it was an entertaining movie. It was great. I love the action in it. I love the acting and the direction of it. I thought it was great.
So. Yeah, I mean, the only, you know, real negative thing, we didn't touch on her at all, but the lady that plays the nurse character, like, it was just hard for me to get around because she seemed to be cold the entire movie. Like,
well, she was an administrator. Most people who are in control of something that big, they are, like, all about the facts and figures and numbers. So I think that was true to her character. But my final thoughts is, I mean, I love this movie. I've said before, I hate remakes, and this was not a remake. It was a sequel, and it was true to the original, gave enough props to the original that, I mean, it really felt, I felt as amazed as at this movie as I was when I was a kid seeing the first movie. I mean, the box office, so I mean, it's broke records. I think it made like $500 million the first weekend, so it's...
Yeah, dude, it's put everything to shame. There's only one movie I can think of that's going to be an absolute, you know, ball buster to this, and we all know what that film is.
Yeah, Star Wars may break that record, but for now, Jurassic Park is on top. And with that, we'll wrap it up and be right back with Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Raptors, well, believe me, this has been one lousy day. Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30. And we're back with Beer 30.
Yeah. So what do we got on the menu today? Should you take a big gulp there, sir?
Yeah, we've reviewed a lot of Innocent Gun beers because, well, they're just damn tasty. And this is the new limited edition Highland Ale.
Rich Scotch Ale matured over oak chips infused with a fine Highland Scotch whiskey. I gotta say, dude, I'm really in love with this beer because not only does it taste like beer, but also because of the scotch and everything, you get the warming of the tummy, you get, you know, the nice scotch taste, and pairing this with cigars and everything else is just freaking awesome.
Yeah, this is another one of their limited edition series. Like, you'll see them, you know, actually in... They only come in the 22-ounce bombers. They're usually in, like, a box with it. And, like, so they're extremely limited editions, but, like, so they've just released in, like, April or May, so you should still be able to find them on the shelves. And the difference between, like, this one and some of the other Highland Ales is this one is actually infused with the scotch. It's not just, you know, aged in barrels. It's actually got a little bit of scotch in it. So you definitely get not only the beer taste, but you actually, it has a little bit more more of an alcohol flavor to it than
yeah. I mean,
than
like
some
I said, this
previous.
Definitely warms the tummy on the way down. I mean, this is awesome to sit down, chill, and relax. And I don't know. I mean, I dig the golden color here as you hold it up to the light and everything. I mean, it's just, dude, all around the color, the smell of this beer, and everything is just absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I've not found a bad Innocent Gun yet. And according to their label, incredibly smooth finish and an aroma of heather honey and rich spice.
And if you're looking to pair this with something, they're recommending, you know, some mature cheese or something to pair. So once again, I'm kind of going back to the whole, you know, Joe, you can have your cheese and apples. It'll be okay. Yeah.
Cheese and apples.
Cheese and apples, dude. The wine drinkers do it all the time. Us, as the beer connoisseurs, we've got to get on this bandwagon ourselves.
I mean, I'm down with some cheese, but because I had some good freaking, was it mozzarella wrapped in prosciutto or something the other day. But yeah, I've never had apples with cheese.
Well, I mean, first time for everything. I'm on to something.
All right, if you say so, I'll trust you on that one.
So yeah, I mean, there's a certain spiciness to this beer. You know, a smooth caramel. I mean, I just can't rave enough about the quality of beer that's in my glass right now that is making its way to my tummy.
Like, yeah, I do like that. Almost kind of like the bourbon barrel style we had, where it had that little bit of whiskey aftertaste to it. This has definitely got a nice Scotch flavor, a little bit stronger Scotch flavor than like the standard Highland Ale. I'm seriously digging it.
Yeah, I mean, somebody that is not a beer drinker, I bet you could pour this in their glass if they're a Scotch drinker, and they would absolutely dig this.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. It's very complex. Dude, this just makes me want to kick back, light up the grill, and not do a damn thing for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, we're not going to get shit done after drinking this. We're done. And it is a 7.4% alcohol too, so it's a little bit stronger than some of the other Innocent Guns. So what are you giving this on our Cigar Nerds Untapped rating?
Oh, I am at a 4.5 on this one, my friend. Don't agree with me. Don't agree with me.
This is a straight 5 for me.
Perfect.
It's
I just figured I could say 4.5 and you would give it a 5, and then that way it's not like you're just copying me. I actually made you put thought into it.
I don't like thinking. Thinking sucks.
It's okay. I don't know, though. Oftentimes when you think, it makes my head hurt for some reason.
Because then I come up with, like, weird, like, very, you know, philosophical discussions. Or weird science-y stuff.
Word.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back with something else.
I think it's science.
Probably. I
don't know. All right. Stay tuned, folks.
And welcome back to science. You ready to learn some shit, Brad?
I'm ready to get my education on.
Alrighty. Expand your brain capacities.
I don't know about my brain capacity, but I will expand my overall general pointless knowledge. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe at some point this shit will come and become relevant.
Well, we've talked about our, you know, robot overlords, you know, one day destroying all of humanity.
I think we've talked about that many, many times. Yeah. What's your fascination with robots?
They scare me.
Okay.
But, you know, you can also use robotics for good. And they've just built a mind-controlled robot arm to help a paralyzed man actually drink a beer on his own for the first time.
That's pretty awesome. So being paralyzed for 13 years and finally you can use mind control, and dude, that's awesome. Like, I mean, not just the fact that, yeah, he can have a beer, but I mean, that's a life-changing experience after that time.
One thing that's cool about this is, you know, they've had robotic arms before in the past, but this time they actually inserted, at the California Institute of Technology, they implanted prosthetic devices actually in the brain, in the part of your brain that controls your intent to move, not like the actual like movements. Like when, like, you know, somebody throws a ball at you, you just stick your hand up and catch it. You know, you don't have to think about.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they call hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so many mathematical calculations that your brain does automatically. You're not actually sitting there having to think, you know, move shoulder, rotate arm, extend hand, close hand. And that's what the old system of doing it does. And this one, like I said, since it's in the, instead of being in the motor cortex, it's in the, parietal cortex, posterior parietal cortex is where you, all your intent part of your brain is. So now he only has to think, grab that beer, and the arm will make that movement automatically without having to think about, you know, the individual steps of that motion.
Yeah,
so this is a completely new way of actually, you know, controlling robotics.
Yeah, so I mean, this basically generates the electrical signals that are sent down to the spinal cord, control the contractions of every muscular movement.
Well, that's the old way of doing it. That part was when they put the probes in the motor cortex.
Ah.
And that, so instead of, you know, actually having to think about and control each individual muscular movement, now it's just you have to think, I want to grab this, I want to touch this, I want to pick this up, and then all that stuff is done automatically instead of having to think through the individual, you know.
So this is muscle initial intent instead of, you know, the specifics of each muscle.
Yeah, okay. which is more how your brain, you know, works naturally anyway. Because like I said, you know, to build a computer that like can catch a ball, there's a lot of mathematical equations that would, you know, that your brain does without you even thinking about it.
I took a robotics class one time, and part of it was we had to actually write the program to make the robot like pick up the ball, move it like a foot, and drop it. And dude, it was like a week long of code just to do that simple movement.
Yeah, and that's pretty much how like the old robotic prosthetics would work. And with this new system, like I said, it's more natural. With this implant, the guy's name is Eric Sorto. I mean, he can paint. He can do pretty much anything that you could do with a normal arm with this, you know, robotic prosthesis.
Dude, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're one step closer to, like, you know, the $6 million man.
I could see that.
I mean, yeah, or was it Ghost in the Shell, where, you know, everybody's getting upgraded and adding adding Android parts to improve yourself.
So I wonder if with the new Ghost in the Shell live-action movie, if this technology is going to rear its head and, you know, we actually have practical effects.
Dude, if I could download my consciousness into a better functioning body, yeah, I'd go for an upgrade.
This is going to be Smoking Joe 2.3.
Damn right. Yeah, all of a sudden I'm like, you know, look like Arnold in his prime.
Yeah, you just gotta be
instead
careful.
Of Kevin Smith in his prime.
Yeah, but then you can't use your, hey, this is my average Joe pickup line.
Which that dude's lost 80 pounds now, so he's making me look bad. I'm about to like catch up with him.
I don't know, man. You've been doing good, so just keep up the good work.
Yeah, but if I had a robot body, I could like, you know, put a built-in humidor and like a beer cooler and stuff in my chest. Yeah.
Yeah, but that'd be weird. That'd be like you're going all internal to like hand me a cigar or something, and
freaking have a lighter in my finger, just, you know, pop the finger peels back and lights my cigar.
I don't know where your fingers have been.
Freaking laser vision and shit. I mean, there's just tons of potential.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential, but you would use none of it for good. It'd be like, hey guys, watch this. This guy's about to have a bad day, but we're all going to laugh hysterically.
Yeah, true. Then I would be the robot overlord, and, you know, like I said, shit would go bad. That's why you never give me superpowers. I would immediately turn, like, I wouldn't even go supervillain. I would just be like, I'd be Loki. I would be like playing tricks on everybody with my superpowers.
Oh, the trickster god.
Speaking of robotically controlled things, you know, with this being the anniversary year of Back to the Future, you know, which actually took, like, when he goes to the future, it was this year. And I'm like, that's bullshit. We don't have any flying cars. We don't have hoverboards. Like, you know, the movie lied. But someone has actually built a hoverboard, because we talked about the, was it the Hondo board a while back that floats on magnets. Anyway, because of, like I said, I kind of lost my train of thought there. Catelyn, he's Canadian, so it's a weird name.
Alexandru Doros.
Like I said, a Canadian has set the Guinness World Book of Records of longest flight on a hoverboard. And his operates, like I said, not like the magnetic board we talked about before. This one is actually almost like a giant drone. It's got like a bunch of little like propellers and stuff. And this one actually flies more like the hoverboards you see in the movies. I mean, it can actually get up pretty high and go for like a fairly long distance. Like, see, he set the record, which is now 900 feet 905 feet and 2 inches over a lake in Quebec.
And not just over a lake, but 5 meters over the lake.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
That's probably why I did it over a lake. So if it crapped out and he crashed, it's not going to be a bad landing.
I mean, that was always my premise. You know, I was always scared to get into the whole drone thing because I'm like, man, I just know I'm destined to crash this thing and it's not going to be pretty.
That's why I want to get that racing drone we saw that was all like... carbon fiber, so if you crash it, all you gotta do is replace the propellers and it doesn't damage the rest of the the rest of the board, because propellers are cheap. It's the rest of the $300 to $800 or $1,000 machine that I don't want to break.
Yep, true that. True. Yeah, that.
This, I mean, this thing is awesome. There's a video in our show notes of the link, and I mean, this thing will fly pretty damn high. So actually is foot controlled. I mean, he controls the board by the movement of his feet. It's not like a remote control. It's not just a dude riding a drone. He's actually controlling it. And it, like I said, it flies and looks a lot like what we've seen.
And I mean,
in
this
movies.
Thing is actually able, you know, it's quoted here that he's actually able to reach scary heights and fly anywhere over anything like the real McFly.
Yeah, like I said, 5 meters is high enough. I don't know if I'd want to go like 100 feet in the air on this thing.
That's a long way to fall, dude. And even if you fall over a body of water, like, unless you're, like, vertical or something, that's still like hitting a concrete wall. That's not going to feel good.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll wait until the technology is a little bit more perfected before I try something like that.
Word. What else you got on the agenda for us?
Next thing is Bill Nye the Science Guy is...
Bill!
Which, you know, now, like, Netflix actually has the... Bill Nye the Science Guy.
You know, I got made
Netflix,
fun of for watching Bill Nye the other night. It upset me a little bit.
Dude, that's how you learned science back in the day.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there wasn't podcasts talking about science articles and useless facts, so.
Yeah, for me, it was, was it Mr. Wizard back in the day? But, yeah, for the
Mystery
younger...
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
No, remember old Nickelodeon had whatever that, the freaking
no,
Mr.
Dude,
Wizard
remember,
shit.
I didn't have cable, so there was no Nickelodeon from my childhood.
But yeah, the younger generation had Bill Nye the Science Guy, but who now is the CEO of the Planetary Society, which that kind of sounds like some weird either superhero group or group of supervillains. But they have just launched a spacecraft or a test craft to test a theory that they're working on called light sail technology. With this, it's a new kind of propulsion. Instead of using traditional chemical rockets, this thing would actually release a giant mylar sheet and use it as a sail using cosmic radiation, pretty much,
sail?
To pull the spacecraft through space. And it works kind of like, you know, out there in space, you know, there's protons and radiation and stuff, you know, always going through the atmosphere. And this would, like, collect these protons and use it as propulsion to, like, drag the ship through space. And it can, you know, it's kind of a slow start, but it can actually reach much faster speeds than our traditional rocket technology and really doesn't require any kind of fuel. So it can go a lot farther than and be lighter than traditional spacecraft propulsion.
Interesting.
I mean, it's actually, based
sounds
on...
Sounds like some rocket science shit.
Well, technically, yes, it is. It is rocket science. That's why it sounds like rocket science.
And that, my friends, is why it's going over my head.
Yeah.
Whee!
Yeah, this version is, they're not going to actually get to do any light sailing. This is kind of a test to see if the sail will deploy as it's designed to. You know, this will never actually escape Earth gravity. Basically, it's going to open up, you know, prove the concept, and then crash back into Earth. But they're planning a actual test flight of a light sail device, I think either late this year or early next year, one. But this was the first step in testing that theory.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting now that I'm actually reading through it instead of just listening to you jabber about it.
Behold the finger of doom.
On the Fury Road.
Once again, I don't know where that finger's been, so I'm not even going to ask.
Yeah, this was originally a theory kind of started by Carl Sagan back in the day. It's a very small device, too, like I said, because it's just testing the sail. It's like a bread box-sized thing. But yeah, eventually, like I said, if we could build full-size ships. An example of this, if you watched the second Star Wars movie, Count Dooku's ship kind of had like a light sail device when it went into, you know, it's like warp drive, like ejected this weird parachute thing when it shot off into into light speed. And it's basically that same technology, same.
Yeah.
Same
and I theory. Just want to throw it out there. You know, once again, we've talked a little bit about crowdfunding and Kickstarter and stuff. So you know, all of this was fully funded from a Kickstarter campaign. I thought that was pretty cool. Like you hear all the time, you know, different political TV shows talking about taxpayer dollars being wasted and how many billions of dollars go to programs that never amount to anything. So it's really cool to see people step up and actually, you know, funding things out of their own pockets more so than Big Brother stepping down and saying, hey, we think this is going to be good, so we're just going to take it from you anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing with, you know, like I said, the shuttle program shutting down and NASA kind of going more to the commercial space flight. So it's not just, you know, they've opened up space exploration to the private sector. And that's, you know, really where you get some of your best, you know, advancements is when not just, you know, government funded science, which is very limited, but you can get billionaires like, you know, Elon Musk and whatever the guy from Virgin, you know, with the Virgin Galactic ships and stuff like that. I mean, these guys have the time and the money to hire the best people and build the, you know, put the most funding and research into these projects. So, yeah. And this, I mean, this is, like I said, with your traditional rocket, you're limited on your range because it's your weight and your fuel capacity. But with this, you're using space as your fuel. So you can literally fly for, you know, for as long as the ship will last without running out of fuel. One last quick one. When we spoke earlier about the robotic arm and the future of bionics, a company called Ocumetrix Technology Corp has built a bionic eye replacement. Basically, it replaces the lens of your eye, almost like a cataract surgery, but it can actually make your almost give you superhuman sight. I mean,
this thing is touting three times better than 20/20.
Yeah, I mean, literally, if you can barely, you know, they say, you know, if you can barely read a clock at 10 feet away with this, you could see it at 30 feet away. So it's definitely something for people who, you know, have born with bad eyesight or, like I said, or, you know, as you get older,
yeah,
your eyesight's
taking,
on the...
implantable contact lenses, or ICLs, to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait to start hearing the radio advertisements for this shit.
You start getting the eye plants what's it, Deadshot from... Suicide
Although
Squad.
I don't know, man. Like I'm looking at the contact lens itself on this thing. It almost looks like once that's implanted, it's gonna be like a little chameleon, though. Like with the eyes rotate 360 degrees and shit. So
yeah, it'd be weird. You know, put some like LED technology in it somewhere so you can change your eye color. You know, give yourself like weird lizard eyes.
Well, I mean,
and
they
stuff
already kind of have that with the colored contact lenses. So it'd be interesting to have an electronic counterpart to that.
Yeah, that you could just instead of just having one design, you could like switch it.
Okay. Just suck if something were to fry in your eye, though.
Oh, just turn them red. Give you like you get angry, you get the freaking demon eyes.
There you go again with the freaking laser beam eyeballs.
Damn right, man! I want laser beam eyeballs.
I mean, I see that.
All right, well, that'll wrap us up, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for Blowin' Smoke.
And welcome back. This is the Blowin' Smoke segment where we talk to cool people that have interesting shit to say. Today, we're at New Vision Tattoos. And
wait, are we talking to ourselves?
Besides that, shit to say.
But today, we're at New Vision Tattoos in Gainesville with Eric Carpenter. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi. That's so, all I have to say. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not saying anything else.
Interview's done. We're good.
Yep, that's it. Just
all right, that's a wrap, folks. You're done.
Oh, hi and piss off. That's it. There you go.
Spoken like a true artist.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. So how long have y'all been up here tattooing people?
The shop's been here 9 years. I've been here 7 and currently own it.
Sweet. Yeah, like we, you know, me and Brad both have had Eric's mark on us. We pretty much... all my tattoos have come from you. So like I said, we've known him for quite a bit now.
Yep.
And we still come by and see him occasionally.
Yeah. So apparently I didn't screw up too bad.
Nope. I think you're good.
So what's some things that people, you know, are coming to the, haven't got a tattoo before coming to get their first tattoo. What's some stuff that they should know beforehand before coming up here and asking dumb questions?
I mean, first off, I mean, if you've never been tattooed before, we're here for your education. So there's really not dumb questions in that regard. It's like, But the thing is, it's kind of all a personal thing. I mean, it's however they want. If they want to sit there and have this deep-rooted meaning that, you know, to their tattoo, that's great. If they just want to pick something off the wall, that's great, too. We're not going to care, and it's really about them, not about us. So, I mean, that's the big thing. You know, other than that, it's just stick to the aftercare your artist tells you, even if it's, you know, don't go home and have your buddy say, oh, well, I did this, and do what they did, because your buddy's not a tattoo artist. They don't know, you know? And I don't know why people will listen to them over us, because it's like, I've been tattooing 7 years. How are you going to listen to this jackass?
I went on Google, yeah, and I found this thing on Wikipedia that said I should stand upside down for like 1 hour a day, so that's what I'm going to do.
Right? I'm like, yeah, okay, how many years has that guy been tattooing? Well, he doesn't tattoo. He runs a forklift. Okay, well, that's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but that doesn't mean he knows fuck all about healing a tattoo. Why the hell do you follow his advice and not mine?
I mean, so that would basically go back to, you know, folks that skin types, density of skin, all kinds of shit like that. Two people aren't the same. So, you know, for me, like you said, I would always take your advice over the shit you would read on the internet, which back when I was getting tattoos from you, there really wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on the internet besides porn anyway.
Yeah, because we're old. Well, yeah. I mean, we all know about the porn on the internet.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
So say someone who is wanting to, something that I've wanted to know is, if you can draw, you know, working on someone's skin is a lot different than working on someone's, you know, a sheet of paper. So how is it, you know, different becoming a tattoo artist than, say, like, you know, a painter, writer, or other artist, yeah.
That's well, I mean, most other artists, they have, you know, their style, their specialty, their thing that they do. They, you know, I paint 2x4 planks and put American flags on them. Woohoo! You know, I mean, they do whatever the hell they do. And, I mean, that's great. They make money. They make a living. That people like it. People buy it. We can't pigeonhole ourselves into that. And a lot of artists that I see nowadays, since I started, instead of learning and doing flash and doing everything that walks in the door and every single thing, they want to do, oh, I do neo-traditional with a classic twist of blah, 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 or this or that or whatever. I mean, it's not that anymore. It's, I want to tattoo art on you, whether it's, you know, some kind of watercolor nonsense that everybody's into these days, or whether it's Sailor Jerry flash, or whether it's this or that. You know, you got to be able to do it all. And yeah, and that's the main difference.
Yeah, if you want to be successful, you got to be open to, you know, as many styles as you can. That's just another, you know, thing in your toolbox that you can throw on somebody.
So let me ask you, how does one go about, you know, talking about being an artist and everything? How does one prepare to be like, all right, I'm going to start sticking needles and ink and skin now? Like, do you just, I'm the canvas and, you know, take it upon yourself? Or,
I mean, there's several different ways a lot of people get their start. The right way to start is to sit there and draw and draw and draw and draw and draw until you get a shop and an artist and people you want to learn from, and you pay for an apprenticeship either by, you know, working hard at the shop and exchanging that work for apprenticeship, or by paying for the apprenticeship or whatever. And then you learn from the artist, you learn the right way from the get-go, you don't form bad habits, you don't do anything screwy, and you become a better artist quicker. You know, and then there's the wrong way, which is, you know, hey, look, I bought these machines off of a website or eBay or whatever, and I'm just going to start tattooing me and my friends. And, you know, you pick up a lot of bad habits, and it can just really retard your growth as an artist.
So someone who is like brand new kid today that wants to eventually become an artist, so learning about drawing techniques is probably the first step. You know, learn how to, you know, come up with a design and perfect, you know, your drawing skills is you would be the recommended
yeah,
step.
I mean, draw everything, you know. I mean, you can go on the websites, and I mean, a lot of times you can either download or buy flash directly off the website and sit there and trace it and draw it out with colored pencils until you learn how to draw a tattoo flash.
What do you think the like percentage of like what you do, the your standard catalog flash art versus your custom pieces that people come in and get?
I mean, nowadays everything's changed. I mean, internet's changed everything. From, you know, I used to do probably about 75% flash, you know, from the books or on the wall, and 25% custom stuff. Now I'm doing more kind of 50-50-ish, but instead of flash, nobody's really picking anything off the wall or out of the books. They're all grabbing stuff off Pinterest. They're all grabbing stuff off Google Images. And I mean, I literally, I've had girls walk in and I've been like, yeah, I've seen that tattoo 6 times this week.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one thing I would say is important as a tattoo customer is to, you know, find an artist you like and build a relationship with that artist because, I mean, all but two of mine are custom work. That's not, you know, something I picked out of the catalog. It was basically, hey, man, I got this idea. I can't draw. Here's the general idea. Make something for me. And, you know, come back and, you know, however long, a couple of days to a week or so. And, you know, there's something amazing there that, you know, I've given, you know, you the freedom to,
custom
to
pieces.
Come up with.
Who the hell drew anything for you?
Like this one?
Oh, God, he just lifted up his shirt. That's terrifying.
Hey, you're the one that had to look at it for 5 hours while we did this thing, so.
I haven't even had a drink yet. Fuck.
That was the joke. I know, right? Joe only gets sexy after a lot of beer. A lot of beer.
And then he gets sexy after a lot of blood loss. Yeah, whatever. Like I said, yeah, hour five, I'm ready to confess. I'm like, here's the codes to nuclear weapons, man. Just.
I never got any codes to nuclear weapons. That's why all of you are still alive.
Oh. And like I said, it is, you're paying for artwork, not, you know, so you see some people especially that don't know anything about twos that are like, oh, I got this design off Pinterest and I want to get it. They want to come in and complain about like, or try to negotiate a price. And you wouldn't do that with if you were getting a, you know, custom artwork to hang on your wall. I mean, it's basically the same thing except you're the canvas.
Right. And I mean, the other thing too is it's like my time and dedication. I'm here 80 something hours a week. People don't realize they're not just paying me for the half an hour, the hour and a half, the 2 5-hour, however long they're sitting in my chair. They're paying me for the fact that I've devoted my life to this to be able to do it correctly. I've given up time with my family, time with my friends. I've given up all of that spare free time that everybody else has and takes for granted. I've given all that up to do what I do, and that's why I charge what I charge, because you know, I've got to make a living off of it. I've got to make money, and I've got to do what I got to do. And, you know, and complain about the price, it's a lot like, okay, well, you know what? If I walked into fucking Burger King and was like, hey, guess what? Today on the fryer, you're not worth $7 an hour. You're worth $3.50 an hour. Fuck you. I guarantee you so many people, I'd be like, man, I quit this job. You know? So what do you think I'm going to do when you walk in here and go, oh, $50 is too much for a tattoo? Well, then I don't want to do my job for you. Fuck off.
If you want a cheap tattoo, the county jail is down the road. I hear they do that shit for a carton of cigarettes and, you know, some other favors. So if you really want a cheap tattoo.
Wait a second. Isn't that still roughly about $50, though?
Some days.
Minus the hospital bills and everything else.
And the infection.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. We always say, you know, steak dinner, man. How many people will... They'll go out to a steak dinner with their girlfriend. They'll pay $60, $70, $80 on that for a night that they don't get anything from. But then here's this thing going on you for forever, and they want Manuel in his apartment to do it for $10.
Yeah, and with Manuel, you're going to get the, you know, the infection. You're not going to get the quality of artwork. You're not going to get the sanitary conditions. I mean, there's just a lot of risk to doing a... You know, you don't want something cheap that's going to be forever. I mean, it's something you're going to have to deal with, barring laser surgery, for the rest of your life. You know, so you might as well be a pretty corpse with nice artwork on.
Aww, yes. Such a pretty corpse.
I should have a shirt made. Yeah, I want to be a pretty corpse someday.
So it's no longer the pretty princess. You're now the pretty corpse.
I want you to make a shirt that says, I want you to pound pancakes up my ass until I fall over or explode, and I think that would be a way better shirt.
Hey, we have a Zazzle store now, so I mean, we could do it.
A Zazzle store?
Yes.
What the fuck is a Zazzle store?
It's a store where you can put your artwork on t-shirts and random items, so you can like just put up anything, and they make the shirts and all that stuff, so you ain't got to deal with it.
Or dartboards.
Zazzle.
Yeah.
It's got Zazz.
See, man, you could do all.
Apparently.
Man, another place you can sell some art.
Could Zazz all over somebody.
So what's something that, like say someone was wanting to get a custom piece, what kind of, you know, obviously, you don't want them showing up and saying, hey, I want this, like, in an hour. What kind of time should someone schedule with you to...
I mean, it depends on what they want. I mean, sometimes I can draw something up within, you know, 30 to 45 minutes and do all that. And, you know, it's no big deal. I can draw it while you wait and get it done and get it on you that same day. Sometimes it's, hey, man, I'm going to need a week. You know, I got to draw this, especially a portrait. You want me to sit there and redraw and redraw and redraw your dead grandma's face so that it looks like your dead grandma, not Kermit the Frog. And, I mean, that's the whole point. If you don't prep for it, it doesn't turn out right. That's why you have Google fail, and it's all like portraits, because some jackass just tried to put a photograph on somebody and didn't prepare for it. You know, so, I mean, when it comes to that, it's just listen to your artist, be patient, realize that it's on you forever. And one of the more frustrating things I've dealt with this year from the busy season is people coming in and they have these intricate, crazy designs that they want, and I want to do them. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you'll have to, we'll, we need to set an appointment. We need to do this. We need to have you come back and, you know, and we're going to, you know, work with you and get to get it on you correctly. And they're like, oh man, I wanted to get it tonight. And I'm like, dude, that ain't going to happen. It just, there's no way to get that on you tonight. And they get mad and they leave frustrated. And I guess they go see Manuel. He does it for, you know, a pack of menthol cools and a butt plug. And the next thing you know, they're coming in here going, hey, can you cover this? And I'm like, yeah, I remember that. Kind of, because you wanted that on you, and then you left because I said I wanted to take my time with it. So fuck you.
I mean, yeah, that, speaking of that, I mean, is there a mutual level of respect between artists where you don't touch another artist's artwork, or?
I mean, it depends. Yeah, I mean, if somebody comes in here and they say, "Hey, I got this from the shop down the way, and this artist did a great job, and I'm plenty happy with them. Can you add to it or retouch it?" I'll say, "Well, first off, have you talked to the artist that started it? What have they said? What have they done?" Because if they had a falling out and if they were treated badly and that customer doesn't want to see that artist again, then yeah, I have no problems working with them. I'm sad they've had a, you know, an unfortunate experience and they're unhappy and whatnot. And I want to try and make things right and get them to see what, you know, they want on themselves. But if they haven't had a bad experience, then yeah, I try to be like, look, man, he deserves that money. If they want to come and get a different piece from me, because they've seen my work online and they want something totally fresh and new in an unmarked area, then yeah, I don't mind sharing, you know, sharing canvas with another artist either, you know. And I don't mind it if somebody's like, hey, look, I really like that tattoo, but I also like this guy down the way and I wanted to go get a tattoo from him, you know. I mean, that's no big deal. The only time I get kind of upset is if it's like, hey, I've done a great job for you, and then you went and saw, you know, some Yahoo in his garage and got a, you know, tattoo for a pack of menthol cools
and butt plug.
Oh, I mean, no, they probably didn't pay for the butt plug. It was probably a pack of menthol cools and a QT hot dog.
The QT hot dogs are good.
I know. I'd do a lot for a QT hot dog.
Two for $1.50. You can't beat it.
No, you can't.
Oh,
and that's how you pay your hooker after you're done with her.
Yeah, this episode went south quick.
What, bitch? I bought you two hot dogs.
So, I mean, once someone has the tattoo, what's the aftercare that people should know, that, you know, to make sure it lasts? Or say, like, you've had tattoos for a while, you know, you don't want them fading out and everything. What's some kind of, like, daily care that you need to, or week, you know, weekly, monthly, you know, whatever?
I mean, once they're pretty much healed, it's just lotion to keep your skin from being too dry. But prior to healing, it's whatever your artist suggests. Just follow it. I mean, we do, you know, our senior artist was tattooing for 30 years. He started with a different aftercare. We keep with that, you know, aftercare that's pretty old because it works. It works well. It leaves the tattoos fresh and nice. They're finding out things about aftercare that's changing a lot of the tattoo aftercare world. And, you know, all in all, every artist does things a little differently. And they know, and they've seen their customers come back with their work and how that's healed. And they've gotten the feedback from the aftercare and they've done their research. So that's it. You know, just, hey, follow it, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if you go to one artist and he says, put this on there, do it. If you go to another artist and he says, do something totally different, do it for that tattoo, you know.
Just follow your instructions. Mm-hmm. And don't be a dumbass.
So try not to overcomplicate it.
Yeah. All right, so as we wrap up, how can people come find you in your shop and get some tattoos?
Well, we are right on the square in Gainesville off of Washington Street, a couple doors down from the Monkey Barrel. You're welcome to look us up on newvisiontattoo.com. We have our email address on there. We have our shop phone number on there. We even have our address. So, you know, we'd love to see you. We have a Facebook under New Vision Tattoo.
Yeah, definitely go in there and look at some of the artwork. I mean, it's amazing what they do here. And I said it's constantly, the level of art and stuff is constantly improving. I'm quite impressed with your work, sir. Oh, you got anything else to say there, Brad?
No, I was just going to say it's been an awesome progression looking over the years. I mean, you can just see the timeline and everything, guys. you know, you've grown, and I mean, hell, you went from tattooing and apprenticing on coffee tables and shit to now you got your own fucking shop. So
right, and I mean, I will say that, you know, one of the reasons I do tell people, and I'm a strong advocate for learning the right way, is because you're right, I did not learn the right way. I've had, you know, I would probably be where I am now. I probably would have been here, been there 3 years, 3.5 years ago, had I started the right way, and I didn't. And I know that, and that's why I'm such an advocate for starting the right way. And,
there's no shortcuts to perfection, people.
No, I mean, no.
Do it the right way. Find someone you want to apprentice with, and, you know, go from there.
But I have eat, slept, and bled tattooing to the point where, you know, I've gotten to where I am, and I'm happy with it. And, you know, I look forward to going, always progressing and going further. And I think it's really cool to have known people for as long as you guys, and who have seen me through everything and are still like, yeah, we still support you. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that my demon on my leg, that one still gets like compliments when I'm out and about. You know, the chest piece is usually covered up unless I'm, you know, running naked somewhere.
I actually have a little chubby right now.
And with that, I think we'll leave. We'll be right back with the next segment. So any final thoughts on this cigar before we get into the news?
You know, as I got down to the you know, the halfway point down to the final third of the cigar, some of the more spicier notes started to rise. At that point, I became a firm, you know, believer in the cigar. The cigar was made at that point. You know, there were a couple points in the initial smoke where I was getting a lot of the leather, a lot of earthy tones, and I was just like, I'm not really digging it. But then, you know, we got to our Beer 30 segment, we, you know, freaking poured this Scotch Ale, and that made the cigar for me. That's what the cigar was missing.
Yeah, it definitely, to me at least, the strength and stuff really kicked up on the final third of the cigar, and that sweet spiciness, I think, became mellowed out a little bit more, and it definitely, I like the second half of the cigar better than the first half. It's definitely kind of smoothed out for me.
Definitely. So, I mean, excuse me.
Did you get lost in the thought?
Yeah, well, the pizza rolls that I had earlier were starting to emerge. So I was trying to tame the beast. But, yeah, I mean, this cigar paired with, you know, this Scotch Ale, or I would say just a Scotch on its own, would be a phenomenal combination, because you have the alcohol adds a smoothness that the cigar, for some reason, didn't seem to have on the finish for me. So it's, you know, it complements very well, and for me, there's no better pairing combination.
Sounds good to me.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome back to this week's episode of Nerd News.
News!
So, we just had E3 wrap up. There's been a couple of other things come about in the mix. So, this episode is going to be pretty game heavy.
Get your game on.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, with no further ado, I want to jump into some of the games that have been announced. I know you're not a big RPG player, and really,
I just like to shoot shit. That's, yeah. Shoot shit and drive shit. I don't want to have to think and organize a bunch of crap in menus.
Well, one game that got announced by Sony that I was extremely excited about was Final Fantasy VII, because that was one RPG that I could...
That's one of the few Final Fantasies I actually played back on, what was it? That was like PS2 or...
Yeah. And that game was so awesome back then. I mean, there's still times that I go back and I play that game, you know, still even more recently. So I was really excited to hear that. You know, we got some additional titles that we knew were going to come. Halo 5, Warzone.
But the video on the Final Fantasy VII looks awesome, because it's, you know, updated graphics. It's going to be a true next-gen version of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's just been, oh, well, we're going to, you know, try to upscale the game or whatever. No, this thing is completely, you know, on a new game engine and everything else. So I am extremely stoked about it. Excitement, firecrackers, yay, all kinds of shit. You know, on the Xbox front, Halo 5 Warzone. I've been a big fan of the Halo franchise. I mean,
I've not had a
Xbox since the first one. But I used to love playing Halo back in the day. But I said I've been a PS guy since since then. So I've not played any of the more recent Halos. But it looks amazing.
Absolutely. Forza 6, I've been a big fan of the Forza. I love race games, you know, especially when they get ultra-realistic. And I was watching a trailer for an upcoming Need for Speed game. And the actual gameplay, dude, it looks so much like real life as they're driving through the city. The way the cameras pan in and out and everything.
Yeah, I never got into the Forzas because it was just way too realistic. I just want to jump in and drive. I don't want to have to adjust a bunch of stuff. But the Need for Speed games, I always, especially was it the Need for Speed like Most Wanted and Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, where you're running from the cops and hitting all these traps and shit.
The cool thing about this Need for Speed is instead of it being, you know, drift or, you know, this, it's truly open world. So whatever your driving style or whatever type of game you like to play, you have that ability in this game, and it's not linear. So you control, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the way the old Most Wanted and Hot Pursuit was. I mean, you were in an open world, and you would just go find the races within the world. You know, there'd be like an icon to go find if you want to do a certain kind of race, or you could just drive around until you pissed off some of the cops and get into a car chase and
see how much damage and chaos you could cause. One game that really stuck out just being a fan of pirates was Sea of Thieves. And this game looks truly amazing. Like, this is one I could see you and I spending many, many hours.
What's it on? Is it a...
This was announced on Xbox.
Xbox.
Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a Microsoft exclusive or not, but, you know, it was one of the, you know, Xbox reveals.
Yeah.
You know, Call of Duty Black Ops 3.
And I'm hearing now that's going to be a PlayStation exclusive. They didn't mention it at all in the Xbox conference.
Yeah, that was one game that I started out with a lot of my buddies playing on Xbox, and then I ended up having to get the PS3 version because everybody started playing on PS3 and stuff. And now that I got the PS4, I'm just like, dude, with the updated graphics and all this other stuff,
I'm gonna have to upgrade to the PS4 because I've had all the other Black Ops, and like I like them better than I did the regular Call of Duty games. The multiplayer was, I liked the first multiplayer better than I did the second one because I just don't like the upgrade system because you know in the first one you earned money as you played and you could just buy accessories, but with the second one, it was more like Modern Warfare where you had to play with the gun and earn the upgrades by using the gun. I'm like, I don't want to have to play with every single gun. I just want to like be able to, you know, buy the freaking unlocks for whatever I want to use. So maybe the third one they'll improve on that, because that's the part that one of the reasons I didn't really play much multiplayer on the second one. But
I mean, for me,
the single player has always been good though. I've always liked the stories, at least of the Call of Duty franchise or the Black Ops.
Yeah, I mean, I always make it a point. You know, oftentimes I play through the campaign and it's, you know, maybe 3.5-4 hours worth of gameplay, and it always leaves me wanting more. But, you know, one of the things I really liked was the ability to play against bots. So it was online, but you were playing against computer opponents, and that way I didn't have to, you know, hear the 12-year-old kids talk about my mom and all the things that they did with her the night before and stuff like that. And, you know, talking about the upgrades, with that, everything was already unlocked, so you got a chance to experiment with your loadouts, the different weapons, and, you know, without having to invest 100-plus hours into a game.
And those Call of Duty games, even though was it the last Modern Warfare, or was it that Advanced Warfare, whichever one with the
Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, I mean the storyline on the single player has gotten to be almost cinematic. I mean that was like you could have, you know, made a movie out of just the single player campaign.
Definitely, Star Wars Battlefront, dude. I'm you know, you and I talked a little bit off air. Like I'm against subscription based games, but are is this
No.
I'm thinking
you're thinking of the Old Republic.
Yes. Yeah, that threw me for a loop.
Battlefront has always been their ground fighting game.
And it looks amazing. I mean, the
trailer with Darth Vader was just freaking amazing.
And Fett is going to be a playable character, too. I mean, that's worth the purchase alone.
And then the last one I have here, Mad Max Eye of the Storm. Looks like it might be an interesting game. Have to check it out and see how it plays.
Yeah, but we also mentioned The Old Republic. They did show a trailer for... they're coming out with a new expansion for that game, but I've not really played any of that because I just don't really like playing games that I have to keep spending money on.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's...
Like, once I buy a game, I want it to be it.
not only are you having to play a monthly subscription for the game, but you're having to play for internet and, you know, with Comcast and all these other people wanting to put data caps on your internet connection, like... At some point, I see that, you know, kind of phasing out or, you know.
Yeah, I would much prefer like a single-player Old Republic game, like the old, like, Xbox Knights of the Old
that
Republic.
That or have the ability to do, you know what I miss? LAN parties, dude. Like, I can remember, you know, in my teenage years where people would bring over their gaming rigs and we would just set up a local network and, you know, we would have 8-10 of us just doing, you know, all kinds of different runs on Diablo 2 and other games and stuff. And, you know, you were able to bypass a lot of the, you know, crap that Blizzard wanted to put on there. And
I think another big announcement that came out of E3 was that the Xbox is going to go backward compatible with the 360, which that's not anything I'm really interested in because, you know, most people, you still have your old system, so yeah, what's the point of being able to play it on?
I don't know. But
it doesn't improve the game anymore. You're still playing Xbox 360 game.
You
just don't have to switch
it. I will say the one benefit is, like, what I'm running into right now is the PS3 died on me, you know, a week or so ago. So now I'm like, damn it, either I got to buy a PS3 because I want to continue playing those games because I've only bought a couple of titles for the PS4 and, you know, but...
At this point, once the new system's out, you can pick up a used system fairly cheap.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I had Rachel's mom, like, offer, like, oh, yeah, we got one that's only been used for, like, a year, and they just upgraded to the PS4. She's like, I'll sell it to you for $50. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't even buy my Nintendo 64 for $50.
And what about this, whatever, Pip-Boy thing you were telling me about?
Yeah, so, you know, we were talking, you know, previously about Fallout 4, and, you know, one of the things that Bethesda has revealed is that there will be a real-life Pip-Boy for your phone, so your phone can actually insert it. It'll, you know, have a touchscreen interface. For me, I really like that concept because I don't have to pause the game and go through a whole bunch of menus. Instead, I've got this cool gadget, and you know the fact that it's going to be controlled by a smartphone app and everything, it's going to leave a lot of room for upgrades and updates and stuff, and it changes the interactive dynamic. And you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the route of like Nintendo 3DS and some of the stuff they were trying to do. So
you just want to wear that big thing in public like it's a giant watch. Just check out my dude. Bling bling. My nerd bling.
Hey, you can't ask for a better cosplay prop.
True. Oh, and the trailer for the new Hitman game coming out too. That's a game I've always loved playing.
Dude, I've loved the Hitman franchise. Yes. Hitman for me is almost like, you know, going back and playing, you know, 007 and stuff. Like, those games just don't get old. I mean, they're timeless.
Yeah, I may have to go home and play some old Hitman. What else got in the news?
You know, on a little bit of a sadder note, we lost Christopher Lee. You know, he's been in a hell of a lot of films, you know.
I mean, he's played Sherlock Holmes, Dracula, you know, the more recently the Lord of the Rings trilogy is Sauron.
Sauron, yep.
I mean, the dude has literally made a career of being the bad guy. I mean, he was even... Something that I didn't even realize it was him because I've only known him as like the older guy from Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, but he was the man with the golden gun in James Bond.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, this struck not only, you know, from an actor standpoint, but I mean, dude, you have ministers and even the prime minister, you know, all, you know, talked about his talent, what a great character he was and everything.
Plus, the dude lived a life. I mean, he would... He actually witnessed one of the last executions by guillotine. He's one of the only guys in Lord of the Rings old enough to actually have met Tolkien.
Uh-huh.
He was basically they originally wanted to base, like, wanted him to be James Bond because Ian Fleming was like, this dude is James Bond. I mean, he was like, you know, freaking British Air Force Special Forces, and it was an intelligence guy, and like a lot of the shit that he
and
did
I
was,
didn't even realize
is still
that.
Classified. Yeah, like, I mean, he's like, I can't really talk about what I did in the war. I mean, the dude has you know, lived a huge life. And then, I mean, he released a metal album in his 80s. I
mean, and not just a metal album, but a Christmas album at that.
He did one called Charlemagne that was like based on like, you know, Charlemagne, you know, old literature or literary works. And then like said that his Christmas metal album. I mean, the dude was doing like freaking Finnish black metal in his 80s. It's insane.
Yeah, so I mean,
I wouldn't be that cool while I'm 80.
Yeah, I mean, this dude is going to be, you know, missed. So, you know, we're losing a lot of the greats now.
And also, you know, we lost Dusty Rhodes, a famous, yeah. You know, anybody who was a wrestling fan back in the 80s. So, yeah, we lost a few good ones this week.
You know, moving on to a little bit of a happier, I guess, lighthearted note is I stumbled across a video that the Funny or Die folks put together, basically a tribute to the Doof Warrior.
Yes, it's a how to play guitar like a doof.
Yep, and you know, I mean, it gives you the steps. So, folks, if you're you know looking to become you know the badass doof, you've gotta, you know, take a look at this video, and you know, I'm gonna need you to live your life to the T.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's that guy from the Whitest Kids You Know comedy group too, because it just sounds like that dude. Oh,
switching gears back to gaming. YouTube gaming is set to launch this summer. Basically, going to be an attempt to compete with Twitch and Steam, just a way for you know folks that are big into gaming to come together to network, and you know instead of you know typing in the word you know call and you know getting all kinds of call me maybe music and all kinds of things that are of any relevance, it'll pull up Call of Duty for you. So.
Yeah, that's something I've never understood why it's popular, the freaking whole Twitch thing. So I'm like, I don't want to watch other people play games.
I mean, you know, we've talked about it in the past, but for me...
Maybe that's
like
why
if,
I'm old.
If I'm stuck or if...
That's one thing. I have looked up hint videos. I mean, I've looked up videos on how to find all the freaking Riddle trophies and Batman Arkham, Arkham City. But... The Twitch stuff, it's not even people playing hint videos. It's just people just playing the game and commenting on it and people watching it instead of actually playing a game.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes back, you know, we make fun of World of Warcraft and some other stuff. And, you know, people's like, oh my God, you can go fishing and you can do all of this stuff in the game. And I'm like, yeah, I can go to the lake and I can do all of that shit in real life.
Yeah, I've missed the boat on the video gaming.
And, you know, talking about missing the boat, here we're going to talk about missing directions. One thing I thought was interesting is the ways the social media GPS app. Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger actually has, you know, the Terminator voice. So, you know,
yes,
you can have.
Follow me if you want to live.
Yes. And it is every bit as epic as it sounds. So
get on the chopper.
I need your boots and your clothes and your motorcycle. So, you know, definitely something to give a go. I mean, I don't know. I can remember having my GPS at one point programmed with Beavis and Butthead back in the day. And, you know, it was cool for a little while and then it got annoying. So, but that's really all I got. Joe, you got anything additional that I haven't touched on or anything?
No, I think that's about all I remember. Any final thoughts?
I mean, we just covered them, I think. I mean, you know, talking about Jurassic Park and the big success it was.
Yeah, look out for cigar raptors. They'll steal your smokes.
Oh, and I guess while we're talking about, you know, raptors.
Laser raptor.
Yeah,
if you've not seen it yet, total shout out. Go watch Kung Fury. It's a 30-minute video on YouTube. It's the most 80s thing I have ever seen. It is absolutely...
Dude, I think it was everything
insane.
Awesome I could have ever conceived in my life rolled into like one short film.
And then once you get done watching that, look up the music video for it, because David Hasselhoff did a music video that's almost as jacked up as the movie itself. And with that, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Cigar Nerd Pod on Twitter, and we're facebook.com/cigarnerds. We're also on Instagram, also at Cigar Nerd Pod. We have a Zazzle store, zazzle.com/cigarnerdpodcast. And of course, our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. And we're also on the ESO network at esopodcast.com. And with that, hold on to your butts. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.